Want to know more about what your favorite ninjas have on their minds? Check out the American Ninja Warrior podcast. It's available wherever you get your podcasts, and it's a great listen for any Ninja Warrior fan.
Everyone, I'm Rob Wolf, and welcome to episode number 28 of Unformidable, where we take a look at some of the less heralded Mets in our beloved franchise's quirky history. As every player who dons the orange and blue is, in their own way, unformidable. So a lot of LDS madness going on in baseball this week. An exciting playoffs, of course, not Latter-day Saints. No worries on that front. But it's an exciting week of baseball to watch around the clock. And of course, it's been a great round that's been very good to the New York Mets, 4-0 in their history in the league division series. And we just passed the anniversary of the, as I saw on Twitter, thanks to Mets Rewind, thank you very much, shout out, the longest LDS game in history, and time at least, 5 hours and 22 minutes, which of course the New York Mets participated in and won by the score of 3-2 on a dramatic walk-off home run by Benny Agbayani. Today we're going to look at a relief pitcher who played an unheralded but key role in making that wonderful moment in Mets history possible, one Rick White. Rick White was born in Springfield, Ohio on December 23rd, 1968, and drafted by the Pittsburgh Pirates in the 15th round of the 1990 June draft out of Eastern High School in Detroit, Michigan. He signed with the Pirates and made his way up through their minor league system, working primarily as a starting pitcher, advancing through the minors, although in 93 in AAA he did begin to see some work out of the bullpen, which is really where he would make his bones as a major leaguer. He would make the Pirates roster on opening day of 1984, and he would be a reliever long man for the Pirates. He did make 14 starts over two seasons with the Pirates, although he appeared in 68 games, so again, primarily working out of the pen before being released by the Pirates after the 95 season. He eventually latched on with the Tampa Bay Rays, or the Tampa Bay Devil Rays organization, actually pitching in their minor leagues in 1997 before debuting with the franchise in the franchise's debut season in 1998. He started 98 with the Durham Bulls in AAA, but he came up to the fledgling franchise at age 29 on May 31st, 1998, and became a pretty much stalwart in their bullpen from 98 to 2000 until he was traded to your New York Mets. Well, he did make four spot starts with the Rays, 3-98 and 1-99. He really appeared a ton out of the bullpen for them, 35 times, minus those three starts in 98, 63 times in 99, and 44 times in 2000 before being traded to the Mets. And he really made his mark as a kind of rubber-armed reliever, a bit of a maybe segue, you know, between the era we're in now with so much reliever specialization and relievers only pitching one inning, and, you know, back in the 80s when starters almost always went the whole game, White was, you know, never really your closer or your eighth inning setup guy, but, you know, that piece that went two or three innings in his 63 innings with Tampa, his 63 games in 1999, he went 108 innings in his 44 games with Tampa. He pitched 71 innings in 2000 before the trade. So it was really that flexibility, I think, that gave him whatever value he had at that time. He was rubber-armed and, frankly, a bit barrel-shaped of a fellow. He featured 90 to 92 mile per hour sinking fastball, and he really did his it was at his best when he kept the ball on the ground. He also threw a slider, a curve, and a forkball, which pretty much functioned as his changeup. He was never a strikeout type pitcher. He averaged 5.68 strikeouts per nine innings over his career, and with the Rays still a fledgling expansion franchise and trying to build from the ground up, as opposed to the Diamondbacks, who they came in with and spent a ton of money. The Rays, obviously they've never spent a ton of money. When it came down to the 2000, getting closer to the 2000 trade deadline, the 2000 Mets were seemingly headed for the playoffs as either the wild card or the division winner. They were neck and neck with the Braves down the stretch, and it wasn't an incredibly intense race for the wild card. No other team in the National League actually finished within six games of the Mets for that wild card. And of course, it was the one wild card era where, unfortunately winning the division was not heavily prioritized, although goddamn I wanted to beat the Braves and win the division, which we did not do, but it didn't really matter as we were the ones who made it through the National League playoffs that year. But at any rate, the trade deadline for the Mets that year was really about bolstering for the likely playoff appearance, and the 2000 Mets had a bullpen quote-unquote fronted by Armando Benitez, who was always a bit, even though the numbers were always there, just always stressful to watch. An aging John Franco, an effective but often overused Turk Wendell, and a fading Dennis Cook. Wendell and Cook were so amazing in 99, but I feel like 2000, their use was starting to show a bit, even though, Bobby V, of course, is a great manager and really, I think, generally deployed his bullpen very well when he was at the helm of the Mets. But at any rate, Steve Phillips brought in a few days before the trade deadline, July 28th, Rick White as a useful bullpen depth arm, as well as an outfield depth piece, and noted Andy Pettit killer, Bubba Trammell. So White and Trammell came over from the Rays to supplement the Mets' bench and bullpen core for a pair of unfortunately wasted first-round picks, wasted in different ways. And Paul Wilson, a former top overall pick who had just suffered through a plethora of arm injuries for the Mets, and Jason Tyner, just a odd slap-hitting Brett Butler type. Even at the time, it seemed like that was going out of vogue. Why did they draft him in the first round kind of pick? But so White and Bubba Trammell came over to the Mets for prospects or minor leaguers. Wilson had already spent a lot of time in the majors. Jason Tyner and Paul Wilson as the Mets geared up for the 2000 playoffs. In researching this, I also found out that actually earlier in the 2000 season, the Mets tagged Rick White with a loss in an interleague game against the Rays when Todd Zeal hit a three-run homer off of him in the sixth inning, giving the Mets a lead at Shea that they would not relinquish. But obviously that didn't discourage them from bringing him on to the squad. White would actually record a save in his third game as a New York Met, one of 16 saves he recorded in his career, and one of three that he recorded as a New York Met. And it was in vintage, or the best of Rick White fashion, which is that he pitched the last three innings of a 6-2 Met lead, came into the game when it was 4-2 in the top of the seventh. The Mets extended the lead, and he just closed out the game, pitched three scoreless innings in relief of Bobby Jones for a victory over the Diamondbacks, showing that multi-inning versatility that, spoiler alert, would come in very handy for the Mets in the NLDS.
Check out the American Ninja Warrior podcast for a behind-the-scenes look at all the action of the show and more with your favorite competitors. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Spencer Hall.
I'm Holly Anderson.
I'm Ryan Nanny.
I'm Jason Kirk, and we're the hosts of the Shutdown Fullcast, your Avengers of College Football podcast. It says here in the script I'm to riff on what that means, and basically what I mean is it's all already spoiled.
Every Tuesday, we talk about everything from cooking disasters to pro wrestling to unfashionable pants we wore in middle school.
We also do talk about college football every now and then, like mascot fights, announcers fleeing the booth early, and unfashionable pants that coaches wear now.
If you want to take college football exactly as seriously as it should be taken, subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app.
White pitched pretty decently down the stretch for the team. He made 22 appearances, pitched 28 and a third innings to the tune of a 3.81 ERA, 12 walks, 20 strikeouts. So, you know, he did put up a 1.341 whip, which is actually a little low for him. He's having a really good year with Tampa when he was traded, 1.164 whip. But those are incredibly low numbers for him based on his career, probably catching him at his peak, so to speak. But it basically earned him a place on the postseason roster, kind of behind those other pitchers I mentioned in the pecking order, behind Benitez, Franco, Wendell, Cook. And, you know, in thinking about it, you probably wouldn't see a Rick White pitch many innings at all in the postseason these days. Or at least not on the current Mets. You'd probably see a starting pitcher sop up a lot of those innings. At least that was my dream if the Mets snuck into the playoffs this year. All I heard was, oh, not going to go too far with only two relievers, Lugo and Wilson. And I was like, no! In the playoffs, the bullpen will be Lugo, Wilson, Wheeler, Syndergaard, DeGrom, Stroman. It would have been, right? I mean, at least that's what a smart manager would do. So maybe that isn't what we would have done in the playoffs. Hopefully we hire one of those smart managers one of these days. But I digress. White was behind all those relievers in the pecking order, but he would still, you know, you still went through your bullpen, I think, much deeper and more quickly in the playoffs those days, and you're especially going to go through your bullpen when a game goes 13 innings. White made a brief appearance in Game 1 of the NLDS, against the Giants, allowing the unbelievable 4 hits in 2/3 of an inning, but allowing no runs. The Mets were already down 5-1. White allowed a single to Jeff Kent before getting Ellis Burks to ground out to end the 7th inning, and then allowed 3 singles in the top of the 8th, but Glendon Rush came on to strike out 2 batters and leave the bases loaded, leaving White with the clean 2/3 of it, clean by run scored 2/3 of an inning. Again, the Mets lost that opener 5-1 after winning an incredibly dramatic Game 2 in San Francisco, where the team surrendered a 3-run homer, I believe it was a 3-run homer in the 9th by JT Snow off of Armando Benitez to close the game. The Mets took the lead 5-4 in the top of the 10th on a Jay Payton single. John Franco came on to, I believe he struck out Bonds to end the game on what was probably not a strike, a called strike 3, but we will take it. And the series headed back to Big Shea, tied at 1 for a crucial Game 3. And that Game 3 would go and go and go for 13 innings. So, yes, Rick Reed started for the Mets, Russ Ortiz started for the Giants. The Giants led 2-1 going into the 8th inning, but the Mets tied the game on a 2-out Edgardo Alfonso double off of a Giants closer Rob Nen, because Edgardo Alfonso was fucking awesome. And the game would remain knotted through incredibly tense extra innings. Both teams used 6 pitchers, pretty much emptying out their bullpen, so again, as I suggested up front, after Rick Reed, who would give up 2 runs through 6 innings, the Mets went to Cook, Wendell, Franco, and then got 2 scoreless out of Armando Benitez, bringing us through 11 innings. So to start the 12th, on came Rick White. And Rick White danced through two dramatic innings. Wouldn't you know, the first batter he had to face in the top of the 12th was Barry Bonds, followed by Jeff Kent. And if you remember those early 2000s Giants, I mean, you know, they had some, obviously a lot of depth pieces. You don't make the playoffs and win 98 games without, but that was really what you're worried about, was Barry Bonds and Jeff Kent. And those are the first two batters that Rick White had to face. And he did walk Bonds to lead off the top of the 12th, but struck out Jeff Kent looking, struck out Ellis Burke swinging, pitched around trouble. The Mets couldn't score against the Giants' sixth reliever, Aaron Fultz, in the bottom of the 12th. So out came Rick White again. And, oh God, I was so nervous. All I could think of was, don't let Bonds come up again against this man. But with two outs and one on, Bill Mueller blooped a single to left, bringing Barry Bonds up to the plate in a tie game in extra innings. And Rick White induced a pop-out to the second baseman to retire Barry Bonds and keep the game tied one more time to go into the bottom of the 13th, when Robin Ventura led off the inning with a ground out, setting the stage for Benny Agbayani to the ball into the Shea Stadium bleachers in left center and set off a delightful post-game celebration. Much as I remember sitting on my couch for 5.5 hours watching every pitch of this game, I really lived this game through my friend Rob Ward, or as I always like to say, friend of the podcast, no friend of mine, who I remember the game started at 4 o'clock, so obviously, it ran on to like 9, 10 o'clock at night. I know Rob had tickets to go see The Who that night and, you know, went to the city early to watch the game in a bar, thinking, game starting at 4 o'clock. I'll get to, you know, game will be over in plenty of time to go to the concert. Watched, sat in a bar for like 4 hours, moved over to Madison Square Garden, where I think he sat, you know, whatever concession stand had the game on the TV while people were filtering in to watch the opening act. I believe the Wallflowers, so definitely missable. And Rob said that Benny Agbayani basically, you know, he said, I'm giving this one more inning. The Who, it's like 9:30. The band's going to come out soon. I paid a lot of money. I guess I'm going to have to go out there and watch it. And said Benny Agbayani hit the ball into the bleachers. He celebrated, walked out to his seat. The Who came out, took the stage as if they had been waiting for the Mets to win. And I just love that story. And it wouldn't have been possible without this line from Rick White. Two innings pitched, two hits, two walks, four strikeouts, but no earned runs, and setting the stage for one of the most dramatic wins in Met playoff history. The Mets would, of course, close out the Giants the next day on Bobby Jones's miraculous one-hitter. He's another man I had no faith in. Every time Bonds and Kent came to the plate against him, I, you know, had to flinch and close my eyes. But he just had the game of his life that day. And the Cardinals took care of our nemesis, the Braves, allowing us to stomp over them in 5 games in the NLCS. White appeared in only 1 game in that series, giving up 3 runs in 3 innings, the only Met loss of the series in Game 3. And he also appeared in 1 game in the World Series, but I don't remember that World Series and don't discuss it. So anyway, White also spent the entire 2001 season with the Mets, putting up a 3.88 ERA over 55 games, giving the Mets 69 2/3 more solid innings out of the bullpen. It'll be the last year he spent with the Mets, and the trade with the Mets was the only time in his career that White was a tradable commodity. The rest of his career, which extended through the 2007 season, and yeah, I consider myself a pretty big baseball fan, of course, but sometimes when I'm researching these unformidable things, I'm like, wow, you do block out people once they leave the Mets. I can't believe he played baseball until 2007. He latched on as a free agent in order with Colorado Rockies, St. Louis Cardinals, Chicago White Sox, Houston Astros, second stint in Pittsburgh, Cleveland Indians, Cincinnati Reds, second stint in Houston, and closed out his career in 2007 with the Seattle Mariners. Whew. White did see postseason action again in St. Louis in 2002. He signed there late in the season after getting waived by the Rockies. And wouldn't you know, the Cardinal devil magic seemed to kick in. As waived in Colorado, he went 3-1 with a 0.82 ERA over 22 innings down the stretch. But his one postseason appearance after that was a loss in Game 4 of the 2002 NLCS for the Cards, where he surrendered a big eighth-inning home run to Benito Santiago to snap a 2-2 tie. The win would allow the Giants to take a 3-1 lead, and they would close out the Cardinals that night. The next night, on the way to the World Series, they would lose to the Angels. Since he retired from baseball after that 2007 season, White spent several seasons as a pitching coach for Wittenberg University in NCAA Division III, and he is currently in the Prospect League, which I believe is a post-collegiate league. The manager for the Normal, Illinois, the town, the Normal Corn Belters. I really wanted to say Corn Ballers there, and I will always think of them, I think, as soon as I finish this podcast, as the Normal Corn Ballers, but that is the Normal Corn Belters, where he is their manager. Before that, he was in another Prospect League team, the Champion City Kings, as pitching coach, manager, and general manager. Man of many hats, that Rick White, apparently. For his career, Rick White pitched 858 two-thirds innings across 12 major league seasons. He had a 42-54 record with a 4.45 ERA and recorded 16 saves, which was good for a 2.4 BWAR for baseball reference for his career. For the Mets, White was 6-8 with 3 saves, a 3.98 ERA. He gave the Mets 98 regular season innings, 2 incredibly memorable postseason innings, and a few other postseason innings. And he recorded a 0.1 BWAR. While a Met, he did pitch to a slightly above average 1.11 ERA plus. And to give you an idea of the kind of pitcher he was, you know, his baseball reference similarity scores were a lot of those, you know, just career relief pitchers, Matt Albers, Matt Belisle, a bunch of other Matts. No, those are actually the only two Matts on the list. But also, wouldn't you know it, just to bring me down a tiny bit, Aaron Heilman, also one of Rick White's similar pitchers, according to Baseball Reference. Although I think I've noted in the past, I don't quite hold Aaron Heilman in as much blame as others might for that home run that we shall not discuss. At any rate, we're discussing a much happier postseason home run in this unformidable, and that is Benny Agbayani's, which was set up by two stellar innings of relief from the unformidable Rick White. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to Unformidable. Please go to AmazonAvenue.com for more Mets-related content. Follow Amazon Avenue on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can find this and all of our amazing pods wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave a review. It really helps us out. Original music by Bunga. I'm on Twitter at WolfRR, and the show is at Unformidable. Let's go Twins and Astros and Rays and other teams that might be playing against certain other teams. But as always, let's go Mets.